Today, our podcast episode captures some remarks I delivered at a dinner hosted by the Interfaith Initiative of Santa Barbara County. They wanted to know something about the basics of the Sikh tradition, as well as to have a conversation about the healing power of memory in all our faith traditions, particularly in light of our country's woes surrounding gun violence. I hope you enjoy this talk even half as much as I enjoy delivering it. You may want to keep a particular ear out for cameo appearances by my son, Nuther, during the talk.
Our speaker, Raghavdeep Singh Gill, is an assistant professor of religion at Cal Lutheran University, and his dissertation is titled Growing the Banyan Tree, Early Sikh Tradition in the Works of Bhai Gurdas Bala. His interests, Raghavdeep's interests, are in the relationship between texts, subtexts, and contexts, as well as the nexus between the social and the religious. And in particular, he examines the evolution of Sikh institutions over 500 years of that tradition's history, as well as the interaction of Sikhs, Muslims, and Hindus. So his research and his life work has been about Sikh tradition. And one of their most important interpretive writers, Bhai Gurdas Bala. But he has also been committed throughout his life to doing interfaith work when he was an undergraduate at Rochester University, and now working with the Interfaith Youth Corps at the chapter at Cal Lutheran University, and where he was awarded the Diversity Professor of the Year Award in 2011. So without further ado, let me ask you for a round of applause to welcome Raghavdeep Singh Gill.
In his excellent memoir, Acts of Faith, Ibu Patel, whose Interfaith Youth Corps created the religious literacy quiz at your tables tonight, remembers growing up American while growing up other in America. I grew up, he writes, with religious rituals. Morning and evening, my family would gather for prayer. Hands cupped to receive blessings, forehead and nose touching the ground in sijda. Prayer beads sliding through our fingers as we chanted, Ya Allah, Ya Allah, O God, O God. Ibu Patel was raised an Ismaili Muslim. I was raised a Sikh. As Ismaili prayers did for Ibu, Sikh prayers rooted me in a centuries-old tradition that was foreign to my American neighbors and friends. I remember hot, sweaty August days, we called them the dog days of summer in Massachusetts, memorizing Sikh prayers during my summer vacation. I was attending a summer day camp, which, like so many events in our burgeoning disparate immigrant community, was held at an almost ad hoc basis in the Gurdwara, or Sikh place of worship, where families from the suburbs of Boston would collect on Sundays. This camp was held for a week during a vacation from school, and someone asked me at the camp to prepare and deliver a prayer called the Ardas in front of the whole camp by the end of the week. I've been as nervous preparing to speak to you tonight as I was when I had to perform that muggy August afternoon. In Sikh tradition, the word Ardas has referred to a prayer of supplication, usually performed collectively. Nowadays, Ardas refers to a specific prayer that Sikh community members perform in collectivity at the beginning of any occasion, during life cycle events, while enduring trials and tribulations, or at the end of a service. Be it a birth, celebration, as proud of his papa, be it a birth celebration, wedding, funeral, or daily congregational worship at a Sikh summer camp. Like the Kaddish from Jewish tradition, the tradition of Ardas has developed over the 500 years of Sikh history. The standard text of the Ardas today was codified in the 20th century. Ardas means simply supplication. It begins by enjoining the deity to whom the supplication is addressed and in whose holy presence the congregation makes this prayer. In Sikh thought, God is present wherever a handful of six gather to remember God. Remembrance, then, and communal remembrance specifically, fuels the sixth prayer. The Ardas remembers the 10 gurus, or founders of Sikh tradition, who lived and worked to build the community in succession from 1469 to 1708. The office of the guru since 1708 has not belonged to any human person, but has been shared between the authority of the Sikh scripture, or granth, and community, panth. After remembering the Lord, the 10 living gurus, and the dual form of the guru in granth and in panth, scripture and community, we then remember the members of the community throughout Sikh history who have contributed to the community's growth and success by laying down their lives for the Sikh tradition. Many Sikhs draw strength from these memories. The spirit of Ardas helps us to surmount the tribulations we may face today. The leader of the prayer, who can be any member of the community, man or woman, of great age or youth summer camp attendee, then calls on the community to repeat the name of God, or a name of God, Vaheguru, Hail Guru. And the congregation responds, Vaheguru, Hail Guru. This call and response between the leader of the prayer and all those assembled in prayer continues as the text of the Ardas winds through Sikh memory of the community's history, through the tribulations of those men and women who have given their lives for the faith. Bringing back to mind the circumstances of their violent deaths, the pain which they bore, and steadfast silence for the community's persistence, the Ardas reminds its audience how these martyrs gave up their lives before they gave up their faith, renounced their breath before they renounced their beloved Gesh, or hair, which is God's gift to all Sikhs, and which they preserve in gratitude for his gift, binding Sikhs to one another and to all reverent co-religionists who bear this gift of long hair. The prayer leader calls Vaheguru. The response comes, Hail Guru. The Ardas recalls the temporal thrones of the Sikh tradition, the important historical gurdwaras, or houses of worship commemorating great events in Sikh history. Again, the prayer leader calls Vaheguru. The response comes, Hail Guru. And Ardas reminds us that this is a prayer of supplication of the entire community, or Khalsa. And the Ardas text then asks the entire Khalsa to remember God at all times. Hail Guru, Hail Guru, Hail Guru. And from this remembrance, may the entire Khalsa find peace, and may it find comfort. The Ardas calls for the victory of the cauldron, or Deg, and the sword, or Deg. Together, the cauldron, which feeds the needy, and the sword, which seeks divine justice, make up the emblem burned into the psyche and printed on the Sikh flag, reminding us exactly for what we stand. Remembering these things, asking for the victory of these principles, we again chant, Hail Guru, Hail Guru. God is supplicated to bestow the gifts of Sikh discipleship, hair or gish, disciplined conduct, the ability to discern right from wrong, the gifts of faith, and the gift of all gifts, the ability to remember the divine. The supplication continues. May every Sikh be able to visit the center of the community in the city of Amritsar, which means pool of immortal nectar. Every holy site that has been split off from the Sikh community through the partition of the South Asian continent at the end of the colonial experience in 1947 is remembered, and God is asked to make sure that Sikhs continue to receive the ability to visit those sites and to serve them. So much of the text of the Ardas calls to mind some of the most significant collective memories of the Sikh tradition. Indeed, this is how tradition is preserved in our religious communities, through practices that bring sacred recollections to our hearts, thereby recollecting the disparate pieces of our traditions and collecting us again together as a community. In the Ardas, Sikhs remember their gurus, their martyrs, and those who sacrificed for the faith in all types of ways. They recall sacred spaces. The prayer itself reminds Sikhs why they bear the markers of their faith despite difficulty. To stand for the feeding of all that the cauldron provides and the justice that the sword promises. Collecting, gathering, assembling these memories, we turn again and again to a community of believers. Remembering, we again affirm and reaffirm our membership. At the conclusion of the Ardas, the leader of the prayer asks the Almighty for forgiveness of all trespasses. And then, the last three sentences take a somewhat unforeseen shift. In moving from the specific memories, requirements, and supplications of the community, addressing the Almighty to ask for the welfare of all people. This is what makes the Ardas exceptional for me. And this is where Sikhs gain their zeal to be Sikhs, despite the difficulties, despite the hate crimes, and in the face of the unspeakably painful violence in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, that shocked us all in August. After remembering all of these great figures, painful events, specific historical circumstances, we are supposed to take a strength back into the world where non-Sikhs also live, seek their benefit as well, not seeking their conversion or their realization that the Sikh path is the only path, which it is not, or the best path, which some may think it is, but simply putting forth the unconditional request to God that all people fare well in God's mysterious unfolding plan. The Ardas declares, Sarbat de Karaj Ras, may the Lord be beneficent to all. And asks for Sarbat da Pala, the well-being of all. Ardas is a modern way that Sikhs open up to the memories that make up our tradition and that make us Sikhs. Two basic issues about all of this are salient for our consideration tonight. The first is that memory, even in its communal form, is particular. We religious people remember particular moments in the histories of our tradition. In remembering these moments, we reaffirm our membership to a community. The very process of engaging in remembering these sacred events draws boundaries between our community and other communities. Memories of violence are particularly good at raising walls between us. In my spiritual life, I do not remember the Romans feeding my spiritual forebears to lions in the Colosseum. My Christian friends probably do not daily remember the Sikh victims of genocide. But then, and this is the second point, there is the moment when the Ardas seeks blessings for all. A great universal moment repeated every time Sikhs fold their hands in prayer. And that is the other issue to consider tonight, that we also belong to the universal we, the human we. That is what we here in this room are also trying to affirm. Tonight we may be gathered here because we have come to the conclusion that both the particular and the universal are necessary in continuing our existence. This is the hour that is the realm of the particular communities, and there is the hour that is the possessive pronoun of the universal human, we. Interfaith, it seems, requires us to somehow belong to both of these. Interfaith asks us to hold in tension the specific and the general, the me and the we. You may have heard of the Newtown, Connecticut pastor who this week apologized for participating in an interfaith prayer service, remembering the victims of the Sandy Hook school shooting. His church's founding documents forbade him from participating in this kind of joint worship with members of other religions. Of course, this kind of news may discourage many of us who are committed to the interfaith movement. It certainly provides a particular challenge. And yet, it is a challenge that all of us know is baked into the very thing we are committing ourselves to. And when we gather at events like this one tonight, it is part and parcel of our presence here. This challenge is part and parcel of interfaith. It is a challenge of the tension between the particularities of our communities and our desire to stand for the universality of our common humanity. It is a challenge and a tension that we must affirm at every step. Interfaith is not possible unless we come to these experiences as our best self. And to do that, we cannot compromise our most sacred beliefs. So if Pastor Robert Morris cannot come to the interfaith table while affirming his specificity, we must respect that boundary even while we save him a seat at the table. I'd like to end tonight with another memory, a healing memory, not of my own, but that of the great writer and late boxing enthusiast George Plimpton, who reports in the great boxing documentary, which you should see, and it's on Netflix, so get it, When We Were Kings, a moment in which the great Muslim-American pugilist Muhammad Ali addressed a crowd at Harvard University, delivering what Plimpton says is the shortest poem of the English language. Plimpton remembers Ali's poem, which comprised two simple syllables. Me, hui. Thank you very much for it.